Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Economics Report and American Mosaic, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back to As It Is. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. We are here to help you learn and improve your American English. To do that today, we have two interesting stories for you. The first is about a possible threat from North Korea. Bombs and missiles are not involved, but something electrical could cause great damage if it is turned on the U.S. We'll have details. Then, tunnel warfare. Something as simple as a lengthy hole in the ground can be used to great effect when conflicts arise. Let's get started with part one. A longtime advisor to the United States Congress recently said that the country's electrical system, called a grid, is largely unprotected. Peter Vincent Pry believes that North Korea is ready to attack the U.S. electric grid using electromagnetic pulse, or EMP. He said North Korea tested the plan last year when it put a satellite into orbit. The satellite was in a position where it could carry out such an attack against the United States. An electromagnetic pulse is a short burst of electromagnetic energy. For more on the story, we turn to Katie Weaver.
Mr. Pry said North Korea tested EMP in February of 2013 over the South Pole. The test was done after the country's third illegal nuclear test. Later in 2013, a North Korean cargo ship was stopped as it carried missiles through the Panama Canal. The missiles were hidden under thousands of bags of sugar. Mr. Pry said this was not a mistake by North Korea. He believes North Korea was testing to see if it could send nuclear weapons through the Gulf of Mexico and the Panama Canal without being caught. He said, "We inspected the freighter not because anyone thought there were nuclear-capable missiles on board, but because this freighter is notorious for doing trade with drug cartels and terrorists. And so we were looking for illicit drugs that the freighter might be smuggling, and they found the nuclear-capable missiles." Representative Yvette Clark of New York is the senior Democrat on the Homeland Security Subcommittee on Emerging Threats, Cybersecurity, Science, and Technology. She said she did not know North Korea purposely acted, in her words, to test out or test run the capabilities of approaching the United States with nuclear-capable missiles. But she said she is, in her words, again, in her words, "sure, it is not for the sake of friendly trade, but to do our nation harm." Mr. Pry said a group of Russian generals and two of Russia's top EMP experts met with the EMP Commission in 2004. The Russians talked about the development of a technology for a high-energy EMP attack near the end of the Cold War. It was a kind of nuclear weapon that would produce a very powerful electromagnetic pulse. The Russian generals told the commission, "We have bad news. We developed this super EMP weapon, and during the post-Cold War brain drain, some of our scientists went to North Korea." At the time, Mr. Pry said, the Russian generals told them that North Korea could develop a super EMP weapon within a few years. I'm Katie Weaver.
You are listening to As It Is, and we are coming to you from Washington. The Palestinian militant group Hamas has received much attention for its use of tunnels in its war with Israel. But the Gaza Strip is not the only place where tunnels have been used in a conflict. Some security experts say North Korea has dug as many as 20 tunnels under the Demilitarized Zone, or DMZ. South Korean forces and their American allies have found only 4 such passageways between North and South Korea. But the South's defense ministry says it continues to investigate the possibility that there are more. Bob Doty is here with details.
Both Hamas and North Korea have built tunnels for the same reason, to give their fighters a way to surprise their enemy. Recently, Israel destroyed 32 tunnels. 14 of them entered Israel. Militants used the tunnels to surprise and kill 11 Israeli soldiers in Israeli territory. Hamas says the tunnels are an important weapon in its fight against Israel. Gaza shares a 59-kilometer-long border with Israel. Israel says Hamas planned to use the tunnels to kill civilians in small Israeli communities near the border. North and South Korea have a border that is 4 kilometers wide and 240 kilometers long. North Korea built tunnels to permit the communist state to send thousands of its soldiers to places several kilometers south of the DMZ. David Maxwell is a retired U.S. Army Special Forces colonel who served in South Korea. He is now an expert at Georgetown University's Center for Security Studies. He said if North Koreans were dressed in South Korean uniforms and also attacked U.S. forces near the DMZ, that would have a disastrous effect on the trust between the U.S. troops and their South Korean allies. Mr. Maxwell said, such moves have for many years been part of North Korea's military plans. David Maxwell says reports from North Korean defectors and pictures from satellites show North Korea has built thousands of tunnels into mountains and hillsides. He says North Korea has placed artillery, ammunition, and medical supplies in the tunnels. In July, the Israeli Defense Force said Hamas had created what the IDF called an underground city of terror with many entry places throughout Gaza. The IDF said Hamas uses the tunnels as places to store weapons, control troops, and, in its words, transport terrorists and weapons. North Korea has not said whether it helped Hamas build tunnels. But both countries are allied with Iran, which has built underground sites to protect its nuclear program from possible air attacks. Ido Hecht is an Israeli defense expert. He teaches military history at several Israeli universities. He says there are major differences between the North Korean and Hamas tunnels. The offensive tunnels in Gaza, he said, are narrow. The North Korean tunnels are big enough for 3 to 5 people to walk through. Mr. Hecht said Hamas usually waits until it will use an attack tunnel before it digs a place to release its troops into Israeli territory. But the 4 Korean tunnels already had openings on the South Korean side of the border. Mr. Hecht says Palestinians started building tunnels in Gaza long before they got help from others. I'm Bob Doty.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Thank you for joining us today. As It Is and Learning English are a part of the Voice of America.
The Economics Report is next, followed by American Mosaic. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. Investors in the United States are preparing for the first public sale of stock in the Chinese company Alibaba. The company sells goods by linking buyers and sellers in the huge Chinese online market. Alibaba is expected to make its initial public offering, called an IPO, in September on the New York Stock Exchange. The total value of the company, based in Hangzhou, has been estimated at about $200 billion. Reports from Bloomberg News say Alibaba is offering investors a 12% share of the company. That would mean the company could raise as much as $20 billion in the public stock sale. After the IPO, Alibaba could become one of the most valuable technology companies in the world. Apple, for example, has a market value of about $600 billion. Google is valued at about $390 billion, and Microsoft is worth about $370 billion. The e-commerce company is responsible for most online sales in China. It dealt with more exchanges last year than U.S. companies Amazon and eBay combined. And it has more than 230 million active buyers. Scott Kennedy is director of Indiana University's Research Center for Chinese Politics and Business.
Alibaba has grown from a very small company doing e-commerce 15 years ago or so to now being, you know, the dominant e-business company in China.
Mr. Kennedy says Alibaba has expanded into new areas while growing its share of the e-commerce market.
It also is involved in banking and other areas and has just been growing so dramatically that it is now accounts for 80% of e-commerce in China.
He says the company is profitable, which is unusual for a technology company first offering an IPO. Alibaba has chosen to sell its stock to the public on the New York Stock Exchange rather than in China. Scott Kennedy says that selling stock on Chinese exchanges has been difficult.
Chinese companies have been trying to raise capital on stock markets for a long time. Within China, listing has been difficult, and that market has not done very well.
He says that the Chinese economy has grown quickly over the years, but has not supported strong stock market activity. The California-based internet company Yahoo owns about one-fourth of Alibaba. The IPO in September could increase the value of Yahoo's share. China is now the world's second-largest market for e-commerce. And that's the Economics Report for VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Thank you.
Welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. I'm Katie Weaver. Today, we are talking about the 2014 MTV Video Music Awards. And later, we talk about what may be a dying pastime in the United States. Digital technology may drive drive-in theaters out of business. I got the eye of the tiger, the fire, dancing through the fire, 'cause I am the champion, and you're gonna hear me roar. It was a big week for the entertainment industry in the United States. On Monday night, the Emmy Awards honored the top stars and projects in television. But the fun really began Sunday, when the cable network MTV presented its yearly Video Music Awards. That event took place in Inglewood, California. And the stars came out for the ceremony. But who stole the show? In other words, which artists got the most praise or attention for his or her attendance or performance? Drunk in love, we'd be all night. Last thing I remember is our beautiful bodies grinding off an igloo. Singer Beyoncé was among the best-received artists of the night. She closed the show with several hit songs. She got the crowd up on its feet to dance. But the crowd really loved the appearance of Beyoncé's family. Her husband, rapper and producer Jay-Z, and their two-year-old daughter, Blue Ivy, came to the stage to present the singer with the Michael Jackson Vanguard Award. I came in like a wrecking ball. I never hit so hard in love. All I wanted was to break your walls. All you ever did was wreck me. Yeah, you wreck me. Miley Cyrus also had a good night at the VMAs. Her video for the song Wrecking Ball won the top honor, Video of the Year. And industry critics praised her later for the way she accepted the award. Cyrus brought a young homeless man to the show as her date. She also asked him to go up on stage to receive her award. Jesse Helt took the moment to appeal for help for homeless children in America. Police are reportedly seeking Mr. Helt for violating a court order linked to a sentence he received for trespassing. And last but not least, Katy Perry has been the subject of much press this week. Everyone was talking about what she wore and whom she brought to the VMAs Sunday. Perry wore a long dress made completely of denim material. And her date, the rapper Riff Raff, wore a denim suit. The couple copied the style of Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake at the American Music Awards in 2001. Perry tweeted to Spears about her look for the show. Spears tweeted back with praise. "You looked amazing tonight," she wrote. Britney Spears was not the only one pleased with Katy Perry Sunday night. Perry's Dark Horse won Best Female Video.
Let's rage.
I knew you were. You were gonna come to me.
And here you are.
But you better choose carefully.
Cause
I'm capable of anything. Of anything. And everything.
Make me a friend.
So, did you see the clothing Katy Perry and Riff Raff wore to the VMAs? What did you think? Would you wear denim to an important event? Let us know and practice your English writing skills in the comments section below. We will let you know how you did. I'm Katie Weaver.
'Cause I'm coming at you like a dark horse.
More and more movie theaters around the world are replacing older equipment with modern technology. The new equipment heightens the movie watcher's experience. The images are sharper, the sound is clearer. But what is happening to the less wealthy and much rarer drive-in theaters around the country? We go to the central state of Indiana to find out.
Oh, we got three kids.
It is Friday, and the sun is setting over LaSalle County. The sunset signals that it is time for another show at the Route 34 drive-in. A drive-in is an outdoor theater where people watch movies while sitting in their cars. Thousands of such theaters existed in America in the middle of last century. The Route 34 Theater opened in Earlville, Indiana, 60 years ago. Its owner, Ronald Magnoni, says now only a few drive-ins are still in operation.
At one time there was 5,000 drive-ins. Right now there's about 388 left.
The popular Route 34 drive-in appeals to hundreds of moviegoers a week in the summer. The property has about 2 hectares of space for cars. Mr. Magnoni first started working at the drive-in in 1987. In 1994, he bought the business. He says Route 34 has survived a lot in the last 60 years. There have been major repairs.
That's the third screen right there behind me. The first one blew down. The second one, half of it blew down when they were running a movie. And I had a tornado here. It almost took mine down again.
But what a windstorm did not claim, technology might. The movie magic appearing weekly on Route 34's huge outdoor screen comes from an old film projector built in the 1950s. The equipment soon may be unusable, as more companies stop providing movies on film. Many movies are now played with digital technology. Ronald Magnoni says that may be too costly for him and his business.
The machine that I need costs $70,000. I don't have the kind of resources that these big chains have.
It is a problem many independent theater owners face. The move to digital technology places many of them in difficult positions. It can threaten the design of old buildings and historically important structures. The Patio Theater in Chicago is an example. Dimitri Kouvalis is the owner.
The Patio Theater is an old-school classic movie palace
from a bygone age where you don't see many of these theaters left, not only in Chicago, but in the whole country.
The Patio Theater now has a digital film player, thanks to donations of $50,000. The change helps ensure the theater's future. But drive-in owner Ronald Magnoni does not support digital technology.
There's no flicker to it. The people look too good. It doesn't look like a movie.
But he knows he will have to accept the new system if he wants to stay in business. Most movie companies plan to stop providing film by next year. So, Mr. Magnoni has been seeking donations to buy the equipment. He says he has received about 30% of the money he needs. Finally, on Monday, America celebrates Labor Day. It is a day in which workers are celebrated. So we are remembering one of the United States' greatest labor leaders. A. Philip Randolph is known for combining the labor and civil rights movements. Randolph became involved with unions in 1925. A group of black workers on passenger trains asked him to organize a union, the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. Randolph was not a laborer. He was the college-educated son of a minister. He published a socialist magazine in New York City. He was known as a fighter for black rights. Randolph strongly believed that economic conditions affected rights and power for African Americans. For 12 years, Randolph fought the Pullman Company that employed the passenger train workers. In 1935, Pullman finally agreed to negotiate with the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. 2 years later, the Porters Union signed the first labor agreement between a company and a black union. A. Philip Randolph led the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters for 43 years. In 1957, he became vice president of the AFL-CIO. Randolph used large group protests to change work conditions. He planned marches on the Capitol in Washington to protest the unequal treatment of black workers by the government. In 1963, Randolph planned the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. At this huge, peaceful gathering, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. made his famous "I Have a Dream" speech. Within a year, the Civil Rights Amendment passed, guaranteeing equal rights for blacks and other minorities. I'm Katie Weaver. Do you have a question about American life, people, or places? Let us know, and we'll try to answer it on a future show. Send an email to learningenglish@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us.